Toto je podcast Generácia CX. Je určený každému, kto v dobrej zákazníckej skúsenosti vidí cestu k ďalšej prosperite firmy, v ktorej pôsobí. Moje meno je Peter Kmoško a som certifikovaným profesionálom v oblasti firemného zamerania sa na zákazníka a majiteľom firmy Monetize CX. Pravidelne vám budem prinášať príbehy tých lídrov, ktorí sú z môjho pohľadu reprezentantmi Generation CX firiem, aby zdieľali svoje expertné pohľady a skúsenosti. Ak by ste sa aj vy medzi nich chceli zaradiť, tak rovno poďme na to. So in today's episode, I would like to flip the view. Instead of Generation CX representative, by my personal considerations, I have invited a CEO who runs a company to not only educate and de facto help to shift companies into Generation CX ones, but also recognize them de jure officially through multiple recognition programs he runs. Today, my guest is Mark Hamill, CEO of Arcade Global. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Peter. Pleasure to be here.
Mark, I know that you are Scottish origin or native. You live not so recently in Belfast, in Northern Ireland, and now you are a citizen of a country in Central Europe, right?
Near enough, but Northern Ireland, Northern Ireland, yeah. So I'm from Northern Ireland, from Belfast originally, yes. But yes, just over the border in Hungary, you're right, just about 15 minutes from Slovakia.
Yes, so 45 minutes from Bratislava, where I live at the moment, and we agreed that we're gonna watch football or go to attend football after this COVID situation will go away. You know, okay. So you are just a fan of FC Rangers, right?
Yes, I'm a fan. And we're not allowed to talk about Rangers getting beaten by Slavia or Northern Ireland getting beaten by Slovakia at all. It's been bad for me over the last few months.
And that's, you know, good in the football is that you have almost one more new chance. You know, it's there's also World Championship or European Championship and then team level. So I think it's not over yet, and there will be revenge definitely. So
let's see.
Yeah, let's see. So Mark, please introduce yourself to the listeners. We know where you come from, or where you live at the moment, or where you live at the moment. But what is your professional background?
Yeah, so my professional background is quite varied. I actually started out as a salesperson and for a customer experience consultancy company. So that was my, let's say, deep dive into CX and where it started. So straight out of university, I moved to Dubai and worked for a company there that specialized in measurement solutions, training, consultancy, everything to do with customer experience, even some software solutions. So it was quite ahead of its time. And that was 2010 when I moved there. And after a while, I also started running events for that company as the marketing manager, which awards were part of that. And when I was 26, I set up my first company in Dubai and ran a series of large scale business events, all focused on awards and recognition, of which customer experience was a core component. And then off the back of that, also ran a number of, in a number of customer experience transformation projects. And in 2019, I left my former company, set up a new company, and that's which is Arcade Global. And we've expanded more into the not just the recognition services for other companies, but also more in the CX transformation projects as well. So we're involved quite heavily in our own events worldwide, but also running events for other people and helping our clients with CX transformation projects as well.
How did you get to an idea or the specialization towards the customer experience? So was it right intention right from the beginning, or you just came to that point that okay, there's an opportunity within the customer experience to run education and awards program?
It's just been my nature, because that's the first thing that we've been involved in, or my whole career has been in customer experience since I left university. So this is the industry that I've been in for 12 years now. And the network that I've developed with my team as well has been enormous, and we've been growing customer experience communities in particular since my first company in 2013. So it's very natural to be part of this community, and I've learned a lot from an enormous number of types of companies, whether that be practitioners, on the particularly financial services, insurance, utility companies, and the examples that they've set, but also from technology and consultancy companies as well. So I've seen it all in terms of the submissions that come into our awards, and so it's quite a natural fit for us to be in this space, and I've never been out of it, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think it was a right choice, because I don't know about many companies that is focused in terms of education and awards in a customer experience space. And what is even more important, in the last 2 years, I see the growing importance of the topic itself. So you probably also see, that it was the right spot to focus at. Mm-hmm. And you see that it's going the right direction, right? Is it so?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been quite lucky, because our business model is very much, as you said, it's about education. And the whole purpose behind the awards that we do run is quite different to the, let's say, traditional awards programs, mm-hmm. whereby every single company that participates in our awards is able to watch their competitors or their competitors in other categories. So mm-hmm. when COVID hit, for example, last year, because our event and our process is so content driven rather than just the, let's say, networking element of it, we were able to transfer that quite quickly online. So we still have a lot of content available for all of our guests that participate in those events. But we probably have more case studies on customer experience than any other company in terms of video content. So and with every event that we have, we're growing that content as well. So, and some really good success stories coming out of Czech Republic and Slovakia, as you know, Peter.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. So you are touching also my next question, which is about that your tagline is "We improve your business." So improving your business not only means like recognizing and giving awards, but also you are one step ahead of just let's put it this way, recognizing. You also train those companies and you are giving them content so that they can later become the winners, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's not just the end outcome of winning an award, for example. Like we're helping those that maybe don't win an award, for example. So everyone that's involved in the programs that we have, they get a benchmark feedback report with all the comments from the judges. So that can help them improve, either from the perspective of writing a better entry next year or helping them in their business when they go back to the office, for example. But also over the years, with running an awards, we get a lot of questions in terms of, for example, can you introduce us to the winners? And we'd love to learn mm-hmm. from them. So we make introductions. That's just what we do. We it's not something we have as part of our business. And then also a lot of the judges are specialists in their field. So we help. Almost, I would say, a crude way of explaining it would be like matchmaking with some of the premium specialists that we deal with and companies that are seeking help in certain aspects. So whether that be for customer experience and like culture change or digital transformation, whatever it may be, we have the network where we can provide the matchmaking service to help people improve. So that's kind of where the genesis of that terminology came. I know it's quite broad. That's what we mean when we say that.
Absolutely. We're going to cover this because we were discussing, what topics and areas to cover in this podcast. We were talking about three areas. So first was about how to communicate and improve like CX and education within the company. So that's mm-hmm. what we would like to also cover. Second area we would like to cover is companies, like customer experience communicated externally. And that's our one of them is these awards that you are running. And the third will be how to become an award winner. Mm-hmm. So how to just be part of that and but also like win it. And we are looking forward to your recommendations. So let's open the first area, which is how to improve and communicate customer experience within the company.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is important to communicate, you know, and cultivate the customer experience or the customer experience culture internally? Does it start like internally? Is it like possible to cultivate, educate the people inside? And how does it help the culture or the focus of the company?
Well, I think the answer is it depends. And I know that's a sort of politician's answer, but not everyone's starting at the same place or in the same place, should I say. I think the one thing that I would say that I've noticed across any organizations trying to make real changes is that the leadership have to be bought in. That's nothing new. I'm sure you've discussed this in your podcast with other guests before. Mm-hmm. That is absolutely essential. And from the culture side, I would suggest that one of the things is that getting everyone to be in the same mindset in the sense that everyone can play a part in it. I think there's often when people are disengaged, they feel as if they can't contribute in making a difference, or don't want to. But if people are engaged and the leadership are really focused on engaging their staff, and people do believe that they can make a difference, I think that really does have a ripple effect across the entire organization. And one thing is that we've noticed as well, that collaboration is, even cross-functionally, can make a huge difference. So the internal communications between different teams or even within teams is essential for keeping momentum going. And one of the things that we do as well is recommend that there is recognition internally. I'm not talking about our awards. I'm talking about, you know, what managers can do to recognize staff when they are and making those positive steps to improve the organization. So those are some of the things I would say when we look at it are quite, we know about the CXPA six pillars, for example. These are kind of things that are maybe on the periphery of those, but the internal comms and recognition piece for employees is something that can really help sustain a customer experience program.
So what I hear is leadership. It has to start from the leadership. Yep. Absolutely agree with that. There may be some exceptions to this rule, but you know, they're very rare.
Yeah.
Absolutely agree with the engagement because. But on the other hand, you know, we are, or the CX leaders within the companies have been those, you know, who engage the folks around them by explaining, you know, by communicating what is the benefit of having good experience, customer experience, you know, and what does it bring to the company. And with that, even if you create a collaboration opportunity for people to help the customer experience be better, they will be engaged. Mm-hmm. But I would like to step and follow up on your last piece, which was the internal awards. So do you say that you are also running the internal awards so you can like help companies to recognize, I don't know, the best frontline employee or I don't know, to celebrate the culture that they've built last year within the customer experience? So tell us a little bit more about this.
Yeah, we certainly can do. And it's about really recognizing whether it's an awards from us or any awards they run internally or just general recognition. But I think it is important to reward and recognize the behavior that they're trying to change, if that makes sense. So like they understand their objectives of where they want to be and they see certain people or teams, departments operating in that way, then they should get recognition. If people see that they are getting recognition, then it fosters better behavior moving forward. So I think that's just a bit that maybe gets a bit lost in day-to-day, should we say, like day-to-day, you know, we're all very busy. And do people take a step back and think, well, we need to have a recognition program for our staff? I don't think necessarily that's always in place, but I think one of the fascinating things for me is that people are, it's been a year that we've had lockdown across the world, and there's not just individuals, but full teams of people that have been hired during this year. And I don't know, you know, they may not have met each other, and the communication and recognizing their good behavior to make sure it's in line with company values and what they're trying to achieve is absolutely essential. So, it's just whether that's a formal process or whether it's just, you know, the manager now and again, make sure that they do say thank you very much or whatever it may be, it can start small, but I just think that that's crucial to keep things.
Mm-hmm. And And you are helping like with the formal part of those awards, or also you can like suggest the awards or the achievements that should be focused at and rewarded. So are you also the consultant in terms of what should be awarded? So how do you approach this?
Yeah, absolutely. So we could always go back to the objectives. So we would always try to understand what kind of behavior they would be seeking to reward. And then we would make suggestions on the process and then the categories or whatever it may be. Like, to give you an example, one of the ones that we've been speaking to previously, they wanted to do an innovation awards internally. So it wasn't necessarily mm-hmm. about recognition about a customer experience exactly, but innovation and how they can improve. And it could have been something small, but or it could be something for cost saving, could have been something for a new product. Didn't matter. And it really was just trying to understand what types of innovation the company were trying to get. And they were a bank, actually. And yeah, so we suggested a range of categories, and we're still speaking to them. May go ahead, may not, but you know, this is the kind of thing that we could do. And it is, as you said, a formal structured process that could run perpetually, whether it's quarterly or annually. It's entirely, really depends what the objectives are.
Sure. And I think a lot of companies getting into the mind state that why to reinvent the wheel in terms of how to set it up, you know, and how to do it. But instead, you know, they hire external companies to make it run, you know, so that they can focus on actually giving the rewards to their employees and not inventing, you know, how to make it happen, what categories to have there. So I think we are getting to that time. And I see a lot of companies around me to think this way. So I think this is, again, a good time for you. You are also doing trainings and courses within the companies or for individuals, you know, just to become better. So it is also part of your modus operandi, you know, the services that you want to provide. And if so, what are those trainings and which do you think are gaining on importance these days? And are easier to be understood and maybe accepted by the companies or individuals?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the one that we're doing is a public course at the moment. We have done for the last 6 months or so is through a partner called Market Culture. And that is very much focused on customer-centric culture. So it's quite niche, but that's something that senior leaders, particularly in customer experience, like top managers or even CEOs, have been taking part in that course, and that is really how you can embed a customer-centric culture within an organization, so it's not random experiences that customers get. And then I've already mentioned that idea of the power of one and how one person can make a difference is really trying to embed that philosophy into companies, which I think is really crucial at the moment. And the other one that we've been working on recently as well is with Diane Majors, and that is a B2B course, actually, because I think B2B, I don't know what your perspective on this is, Peter, but B2B gets a little bit neglected when it comes to customer experience and philosophy, should we say. It's usually B2C companies that get discussed, and they are different, as you know. So that's something that we've been focusing on as well. But everything else that we've been doing has been internal, and a lot of that is done with Ian Goulding, for example, and courses could be anything from more motivational, so what we would call employee hero workshops, which is really to give a sort of CX 101 with motivation to try to, again, to make them realize that they can make a difference. So it's a range from anything from frontline staff all the way up to CEOs is what we're working with.
I, you know, just coming back to your question or thought around B2B, it's being neglected, but it's being a little bit difficult and different, you know, to business to consumer. So mm-hmm. Maybe the impact of the change that you are doing lasts a little bit longer because the decisions that are being taken in the business to business are more collective. It's not based on individual, but I think this is a wide space. So to focus on this space is definitely a huge opportunity because that market is also huge. Mm-hmm. And I like to combine both. So have a business-to-business company, and, you know, because they're usually the size is much bigger, you know, that you can do. And there are big projects within this space. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, we all tend to see or to seek for the impact of what we are doing. And that's why the business to consumer, and especially, you know, those multiple purchases or frequent purchases are something, you know, where we can prove that the decisions and the changes that we did with that company or within that company or with the operation of that company had impact on the buyer on the other side. So he stayed longer, he bought more, and that's why it is more difficult. But again, the focus of consultancy companies is not so big. So I definitely see this as an opportunity.
I'm glad you said that, Peter, as well, because I was just to butt in quickly. I think it is purely down to the measurement side of the industry. I think it is that. Because it's, they have more information, the CEOs of these B2C companies have more information available that they can make decisions, whereas the measurement of from a B2B perspective isn't, or the reports and analytics, I don't think are as readily available. So I think that's probably why it has been left alone a little bit from the
industry. Sure. And just that this decision process is just different. So that's why, you know, if you understand the decision process, how it goes, I think there is a huge asset for you to manage that relationship. So definitely an opportunity there. But just coming back to the names that you say, Dye & Majors, you know, Ian Golding and Market Culture, these are absolutely the world's top leaders, you know, within the customer experience. So those who participate in your programs definitely get the best of breed. So, so just recommendations there. Now, can you give us some examples maybe in terms of, are you part actually of your courses, you know, that you're providing? Did you go through and you just check before you go?
Yes, I always, yeah, absolutely. So I'm not try before you buy, is what you're saying. No, absolutely. Yeah. So I've been a bit of a scholar when it comes to this. So I am certified for the Market Culture the course.
Okay, so. Yeah. If you talk about the Market Culture, you know, can you give us maybe one thought about, you know, just not everything, maybe just as a teaser, you know, about what we can do within the culture? So because it starts and ends with culture, but this is actually one of the most difficult things to influence.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, what I knew, just maybe one sentence or my thought is that, you know, you are as good in customer experience as you are behaving, I mean, within the company when the CX leader or the board representative for CX is not there. So if he's not there, you know, are you doing what is good for the customer and that would you agree to do? So maybe this kind of thinking just remained in my head in terms of the culture, you know. But what is your thought about how to influence the culture and how, because you said about one people influence or one man influence or woman influence.
Yeah, that's a good point what you just said. So almost like a company with a good culture or bad culture can probably display the same behavior as customer centric, but the bad one can only sustain it for so long. So I think it will eventually become random experiences. But the one thing that I would say from a culture perspective is, and why we work with Market Culture, not only because they're a great team and good fun to work with, but the fact is that they have the only metrics that are, or most accurate metrics for customer culture in the world. So they're able to say where a company's customer culture is versus hundreds or thousands of other companies that have taken the assessment that they have. And then what that does is helps identify where the weaknesses are. So that it's kind of, it goes back to what we were talking about just before we started, Peter, is like not every company is the same. So the starting point's not always the same. So it really helps you understand where the problems lie. But one of the main things is, as I said before, is communication. Communication is usually a key component why companies would struggle if they are on the lower end of the spectrum, should we say. But if companies are doing well, you know, that there's little things that will be able to identify, which can really make a difference. And even a 1% difference on that metric would help have a big impact on the company's culture.
Okay, so even within culture, you cannot say if you have improved if you don't know what is the starting point.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, it depends what your metrics are. I'm not saying that this is the only metric, but it's like it's certainly the one that's probably most specific in this sense, but there's plenty of other outcomes that you, depends what you're measuring, that you'll be able to.
Maybe find. Just, you know, not maybe talking specifically, I just would reinforce your point about first, let's figure out where we are, and then let's decide where we want to go, or what are those areas that we need to improve, like more urgently or importantly than the other ones. Absolutely, absolutely agree with that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so so let's imagine that you know, the company that you work for is has taken all the trainings that you're providing, and you know, they all they have the internal awards. You know, if they have the internal awards, it is the point when they should be like ready to communicate this externally.
It really depends. I wouldn't suggest that by any stretch they have to do internal awards first, but I would say that when they feel as if they have a good story to tell, then they should tell it. Like, the thing it goes back to, and I suppose this is about motivation again, but it's an engagement, is like, there's not many opportunities that you get to put something together with your colleagues, a presentation or a case study, and then present that to the wider business community. I think that in itself, whether you win or not, is fantastic. And then to get feedback on that is something special as well. So we're just looking for stories, the best stories out there. And we, as I mentioned as well, Peter, we've already had some real successes from Czech Republic and Slovakia, and and other parts of Central Europe as well. So if you feel as if you've done something excellent, depending on the categories that we have available, then by all means, put your entry in. And I think one of the things is like a confidence thing. It's not just about winning. And I know that's really a terrible thing to say. But everyone wants to win, of course. But the feedback that you get, the fact that, again, from the motivation perspective for you and your team, I think it really is worthwhile to do that. And I'm sure some of the winners from the region would certainly attest to that as well.
Okay, so do you think you know, the companies or the representative of CX shouldn't be very much self-critical, because the chance is there? So if they feel that a lot of metrics are going the right direction and they are getting good feedback from customers, you know, or you know, they have good verbal teams, and you know, they feel a positive energy and vibe, or they have done, you know, some extraordinary change, transformation, or just reaction to the crisis situation. So that's the point. Not only like write the internal email that this was amazing, just to get some feedback from the board, not just from, very important to them as well, of course. But there's also, this might be the starter to think about, okay, wait, beyond internal recognition, we can go broadly and just get, you know, some benchmark from the broader market than just our small universe.
Yeah, absolutely. Like it is just a case of that. The thing you mentioned there is the metrics and results is the thing that the judges are looking for. You're a judge as well, Peter, so you know exactly what they're looking for. But it is quite simply, looking at from a case study perspective, so it's not company as a whole. It is simply a particular project, initiative, or campaign. So why did you decide to do this project? How did you do it? And then what the results were. So it's quite a simple process, really. And if you think that you've got a good story to tell, then you probably do. And anyone that gets involved with our awards, we don't just take the entry form and then you don't hear from us. We would offer feedback there and then before the judges get it, if we don't think it is up to the standard that they would expect. So it really is quite clear in terms of how we can help people along the process and make sure that they do tell the story to the best of their ability as well.
Maybe now you can like tell us what kind of awards you're running. So what are those types? You know, is it, I know that it's regionally based, but you know, just guide us through briefly about what you offer. You know, what are the opportunities to enter?
Yeah, absolutely. So well, the European Customer Centricity Award. So initially, it was supposed to be an in-person event in Budapest last year, but as we all know, that wasn't possible. So it's a virtual event, and again, this year it's a virtual event. There's 18 categories available to enter. They range from things like customer-centric culture, business change and transformation, contact center, employee experience. There's quite a broad range in terms of the categories available. Companies participating enter a 2,000-word case study into each mm-hmm. of those categories that they're participating in. And then if they're shortlisted, they also have to create a 15-minute video, which is also provided to the judges. And then in September, when the event takes place, that's when the winners are announced. But anyone that's participating in the event, there's also a conference. And then all the content from all of the finalists is available at the event and afterwards on our experience portal. So there's a huge amount of content and learning opportunities, and even at the event to meet other people. So it's on a networking platform.
So, yeah, I'm part of that process. I see the nominations and it takes some time, to write those case studies. So what is the benefits on the other side? So what benefit this time investments for a company bring to the companies or to the representatives? It is about networking, knowledge sharing, and that award that or the shortlist nomination that they get. Try to maybe describe what is the benefit.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that you've mentioned a few of them there, but the appetite for being part of these events is it depends on the person. I have to say, we see that people and companies enter awards for different reasons. Like, we've had people enter just to win, and that's fine. But there's other ones that really understand what we're trying to do, which is the knowledge sharing aspect in particular, and as I mentioned many times, engaging their teams to strive and improve for the way forward. And I think there's a lot of companies that enter our awards and they kind of feel like they're not ready, but they either win or come very close. And what that does for them is that really validates that they're on the right path. So again, it gives them confidence moving forward in their customer experience programs. And then one of the obvious ones that if they are a finalist or win, the PR opportunities that come off the back of it, that, mm-hmm. to say, look, I'm a winner in against European competition. Like, we had entries from 32 countries last year. I think nearly all European countries were involved in some way or form, whether through judges or entrants. So, it's the reach of being part of that type of event is quite large.
It's interesting that, there are companies that they enter to win, because I believe, the industry itself is like pretty young. The customer experience is like maybe 20 years old, CXPA being established 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. So what I see and what I like on your awards being part of your events for quite some time, that, first you start, like 3 years ago, 2 years ago, company, they get the feedback from the judges, mm-hmm. they learn what is important, where the market is internationally. And then the next year they improve. And the third year, there is a high chance, that with the activities that they did in between, with the feedback that they also get from the judges, they have a higher chance, to get either shortlisted or to win, So I think this might be the path I would recommend to the companies. And I also very often see this path mm-hmm. of the nominees that enter into your awards, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the feedback is there to help them improve in their companies first and foremost. But you're absolutely right. Like, anyone that gets involved and they come close, or even the 70% mark is usually quite a barometer where we think they're really on the right track, but sometimes need a bit of help. And those ones that we really do say, look, focus on the criteria, make sure you read those criteria, stick to them. And also, as you rightly said, focus on the feedback from the judges last time round, because the judges are probably going to score some, if you submit something similar, they will probably score it similar. So make sure you really take that on board when writing the new submission for the next edition.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the event, that was supposed to happen last year in Budapest, like in-person event. So, you flipped into the online event, as of course, most of the events that haven't been canceled. Mm-hmm. You are not. You decided to go forward, in an online event. So do the participants, or is it motivating for them to still participate? Do they get the value, they lost like 70% of the meaning after you went like online? how would you like describe this change and also the feedback of the event? And I will tell my experience.
So. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a difficult question. No, I have to say, like, one of the things I would say, Peter, is that we really, really made a strong point that we are not trying to put a physical event online, if that makes sense. We are running a virtual event. Therefore, we will run it as it is a completely different thing altogether. So, you know, the one thing that we felt that was going to be the most challenging thing was the networking side. I think all of us, I'm speaking from my experience personally and my team's experience, but I think all of us have been at really poor online events over the last year. And usually what that, what I think makes an event worse is the one-way communication. So not actually being able to interact with people. That idea that you know, when at a physical event, you have this, I don't know if you have the word in Czech or Slovak, but the serendipity, the idea of running into someone, and it might even be the same word, I'm not sure, but you know, this idea that you can run into someone and then magic happens and business comes from it. We know we can't do that. So we made sure that we got the platform and invested quite a lot of money into the right platform, which really provides the opportunity for not just networking opportunities, but structured meetings. So people could log on to our platform and then see who is relevant for them to meet. It actually pushes the people most relevant to you based on the AI that sits behind the platform. And then people can arrange meetings. It syncs up with their calendar. In terms of the feedback, what I would say is the biggest problem that we had was, our area for improvement, should I say, is that people didn't necessarily know how to use the platform, even though it's very simple. They left at the last minute, like other online events where they simply logged on when the event was about to start, when actually we were telling people they had to log on 14 days in advance because then they could arrange all their meetings. So what we're going to do this time around is make sure that we're a bit more pushy when it comes to getting our guests to sign on. So, and then if that happens, then there's going to be more meetings on the platform. There's going to be more business opportunities that come off the back of attending our events. And people will have more time to view the content because the content's all there. So that's one thing I would say that we focus on or look at it a bit differently than trying to push a physical event online, which I'm sure you've seen as well, Peter.
Yeah, sure. You know, what I truly acknowledge what you are doing is first the scoring setup. So you're cooperating with university. I don't know its name, you know, that you Chester. Set it up. So Chester University, yes. Yeah. That I feel that, you know, I have to think really thoroughly what, you know, those companies submitted, you know, provide them with question or open topics or some thoughts, you know, or just feedback that I have, which is like amazing. So, yeah, I know. How many words are there? Because, you know, I was not there to fill it. But you said 4,000 words? Is the
2,000 words.
2,000.
So, yeah,
4,000. There's 500. Yeah. 200 to 500. I mean, there's like six categories or something like that, right?
Five criteria. Yeah.
Criteria, sorry.
Mm-hmm. So it's about three pages. If you look at it that way, it's about three pages of content. It's not a huge amount of content.
No. And that's what I wanted to say. So for the nominees, it's not so much, you know, still enough to explain themselves. And it's interesting to see that it's not about the quantity of the words. Sometimes, you know, there are nominations which are not using all the space, but they're very to the point. So that's also, you know, one of the recommendation of mine, at least how I see it, you know, to be to the point, try to point out the difference that they made. Or the impact that they made, and again, on the other side, you know, for us, it's easy, or it's a very like professional in terms of there are two rounds. First round is the written nomination, and the second round of the written like judgment, and the second round is the video judgment. So I think altogether, you provide a security to all participants that the winners and those who are the best ones are really the best ones. So and without, you know, like spending too much time, you know, just to fill out and to think through. So I really like this approach and the system that you have. One question, because we just mentioned the European Customer Centricity Awards, but you have other ones. So just briefly mention, you know, the other awards that you were running also.
Yeah, absolutely. So just very quickly, just to go back to the judging bit there as well, that I'm glad you felt that way in terms of the fairness, because that's what we're trying to achieve. And as you know, all the judges are independent as well. So I'm glad that's the experience that you had personally as a judge.
But 100%.
In terms of the other awards, so yeah, this is part of a series of events. So there's two sister events. One is the North American Customer mm-hmm. Centricity Awards, and then we launched in October last year the World Series Customer Centricity Awards. So that's something that we don't just get entries from Europe and North America, but all over the world, as you might imagine. So that one is actually our next event, which is in May, and it looks set to be the biggest event that I've personally ever been involved in. So we've got 300 mm-hmm. entries for that one. Wow. So whittled down to 130. So it took a lot of effort to do that, I must say. But yeah, for a first year event, that's going very well. And hopefully we have more competitors from, well, I have a bit of I suppose it's a bit of a soft spot for, I have to say that, but I want to get more people involved from this part of the world, Central Europe in particular, for the European Awards. So hoping for a few more entries from these sure. countries that we're in.
Sure, sure. So what I hear is European, North American, and then World Series, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
This is it. So my experience, just to conclude this part, you know, is I'm glad to be judging your event since 2019. And I really have to admit that even for me, it is a huge learning curve. Mm-hmm. And I believe so it is for the participants. So again, I talked to a lot of nominee representatives, and they truly acknowledge, you know, the feedback, because again, the panel or the judging panel that you have there is just amazing. So these are really the best people that you can put together mm-hmm. in terms of getting feedback, and I believe this is a quite easy way for any company to get feedback from the best professionals in the field of CX in the world. So I think this is a huge opportunity, and everyone should think about it this way. Yeah. So with that, let's go to the third part, and that's about how to become an award winner. So we said that it may be not the only motivation, because there are a lot of other benefits of being part of your events or training courses.
Yeah.
But, you know, you are there and you are, you know, participant of all the events. You may not see all the nomination because there is hundreds of them, I believe. Mm-hmm. But, you know, from your perspective, and I think the listeners are also eager to hear, what makes the difference between a participant, and that's also a small win, like at the Olympics, you know,
yeah,
and the winner, or at least the shortlisted. So do you have any points to pick or to spotlight, you know, in order to be better than the other ones?
Yes, and some of them are quite simple and obvious, but they need to be said. One of them being pick the right category. Often that I would say maybe 20% of the entries we get after the shortlisting panel reads them, they think, you know what, this isn't the right fit for this category. So we would try mm-hmm. and recommend that they go into a different one, which they 99 times out of 100 would accept that recommendation. The other one would be reading the criteria. I know it sounds so obvious, but it's true. Because there's a lot of awards out there, and I don't know, Peter, if you've been involved in other ones as well, but
yes.
Usually it's looking at the company as a whole rather than a particular project, initiative, or campaign, which is what we are doing, as you know.
They're more general, yeah.
More general. So what happens is that if it's being created by a team of like a marketing or corporate comms team that is writing a lot of entry submissions for other awards, sometimes they get that information gets copy pasted into our entry forms, which, as you would know, is not relevant really. And mm-hmm. So then we would have to go back and then suggest changes before it gets, you know, the final shortlisting is made before it gets to the judges. So that's one thing. And then the last one would be, like I think you mentioned, Peter, like the results being there. Some do them quite concisely, and some put a lot of information. But it doesn't really matter how you do that. But some people really cannot get their message across in the results section. And if there are no results that are clear for the judges, that's the most heavily weighted criteria. Therefore, the score would likely be much lower. So ensuring that the project that you have done has really impressive results, I think that's one thing that the judges certainly are looking for. So those are the three things I would say. So making sure you pick the right category, read the criteria, and then the results, really spend a bit more time on that one as well.
The impact of the activity that you've been done.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, yeah.
Are there any like really surprising winners? Can you pick one or two that you said, wow, they did a great job? Or maybe, you know, you can even compare like last year's result or shortlist, or at least the participation, you know, that they win the next year. Do you have any concrete examples? And feel free to pick names, you know, who are the best ones, or who do you feel that did an extraordinary job?
Well, Cesca Sparatelna did very well, I must say.
I agree.
the last year event, so they really had excellent stories and, you know, won multiple categories as well. So, and I think there should have been, if there was an award for the best celebration video that was submitted as well, they would have won that as well. But that was brilliant. That was absolutely brilliant. But I think some examples of like companies that you wouldn't expect, like one thing that I haven't mentioned is because of the nature of what is being submitted, it is looking at a project, initiative or campaign. It kind of levels the playing field between like the massive companies and the smaller ones. So, you know, we're not looking at just the biggest companies to participate. We've had SMEs that have won. I've got an example where a small company of 10 people, this is for an award that we ran in Dubai a few years ago, but he entered the award, I think it was for a technology category, one category he entered, 10 people north of England. He won that category. And then in fact, he got the highest score out of the whole competition. So ended up winning the overall category. So he entered one category and walked away with two trophies. So there's examples like that where, you know, people you would not necessarily expect. I think there's an example as well of a manufacturing company in Sri Lanka, and they entered one of our awards in Dubai. They were very, very diligent in terms of asking questions, preparing, making sure they had all the information, and they ended up winning all of the categories that they participated in. And when they landed back in Sri Lanka, after getting back from Dubai, the national news were there waiting for them when they came off the plane. So, you know, there's brilliant stories like that. But also the thing that I would say that it really impressed me is like what goes on behind the scenes. So we obviously don't know what's going on in terms of the knowledge sharing as well. But often when we speak to people that are entering again from previous events, you know, now and again, we'll get this little piece of information of, oh yeah, I reached out to our competitors in that category or the winners of another category. And we've kept in touch and we've started exchanging emails on how, you know, what they learned and what they can help them with their internal program. So that's what we really want to get to. It's not really trying to get this ecosystem where people are helping each other out and learning from one another.
Absolutely. And this is, I think, one of the benefits of participating, so that ignites, you know, questions, eagerness for more information, open horizons. So for me, it was interesting to, you know, participate with or ask questions from an industry where I was surprised to be participating. For me, Heidelberg Cement, you know, that was participating last year, they had amazing, you know, results and amazing entry. So it was for me very interesting to see that even in this industry, you know, they have wonderful activities and wonderful impact in terms of customer experience. So those questions, you know, trying to benchmark, trying to learn, you know, and drive and to be better next year is, I think, is one of the ultimate results of participating at your events. Now, question, because you said that you are running even also North America and also the World Customer Series. I got a question when I was guest as one of the podcasts, you know, and he asked me, you know, are there any regional differences between customer experience or level of customer experience in the world? So I don't know if you have an experience, or at least, you know, you can compare like islands, like Northern Ireland with Hungary, where you're living at the moment, but do you think that there is there are differences in the level of customer experience provided in these countries? So how would you address the regional differences in the level of customer experience provided or, you know, being serviced to the customers in different regions?
It's a very good question and a very broad one, I suppose. I'm very long. I think you could too as well. But
yeah, sure.
I mean, you know what? The timing of this question is quite interesting because yesterday, I spoke to on one of our other webinars that we had, and he put it very, very eloquently. And I thought I'd never heard it this way, but he said, customers' needs don't change, but their expectations do. So it all goes back to expectations. Yeah. So people, the need is actually what you want to feel when dealing with a company or buying something or whatever feeling that can evoke, whether it's a restaurant or buying something online or buying something, whatever it may be, or insurance, buying insurance, what we talked about before as well. You know, it depends. You want that feeling, a certain level of feeling. And I think how you get those feelings is it changes with your expectations. So I think definitely that there is there's so many things, like the customer experience is such a diverse profession. You know, there's so many things that can that can be it's the CXP have six pillars, for example. You know, so there's going to be changes, not just country by country, but company by company. So for me, that's why we get such a diverse group of judges, as you've seen, to really make those tough calls when scoring those entries. We've got judges from all European countries, but we try to get from all European countries in excess of 1 million people, and then also judges from outside of Europe to give an outsider's perspective. But customer experience is definitely different here than it is in Northern Ireland, than it is in Slovakia, than it is in Spain. You know, it's different everywhere, but I think it's are there some similarities country by country? Yes, but there's some fantastic examples and some really bad examples in every country as well. So it just really depends, I have to say.
So it's good to have regional differences because that makes the countries unique, you know, in a good way, of course, thinking about that. But there are also services that makes the customer experience, like the level of it, like in some kind of benchmark. So if you just think about Netflix, you know, as one of the services in terms of how they can personalize their experience, how you can, you know, stop using that service very fast, you know, or subscribe the next day or renew their subscription, you know, how you can, you know, get answer in terms of some kind of complaint if you have, you know, or we can talk about Apple or any other company. I think this makes the great customer experience like to some kind of level to be compared in most of the countries these days. So I think there's unique specialties that we have to also keep if it's good, but we also have to not just look for the company to be in their particular industry in that country, but now it's the good time to go beyond that, not just to compare with these online services, but also through your awards with another companies, you know, from another different countries, because of course, within your awards, they can get much more feedback and points to discuss that just looking, you know, some case study or book about Netflix.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So last question, you know, we are recording at the end of March, but, you know, for those who are eager to compare themselves, is there any upcoming opportunity to participate in one of the events or awards this year? So please invite us.
Anyone that's part of a European company can participate in the European Customer Centricity Awards. The entry deadline is the 6th of May, and that doesn't mean that you have to actually submit all your documentation then. Got a couple of weeks after that to submit your entry forms, and the event will take place in September. So we're looking for the best stories from across Europe, and would love to have some companies from Central Europe participate. So you're all welcome.
Sure. And, you know, my recommendation, I really would like to encourage the Czech and Slovak companies that are listening to us to participate, because, you know, we here tend to be shy. But believe me, you know, there are really companies such as we talked about Česká sporiteľňa, and I know about other ones, you know, I work for, or I just notice, you know, their operations on the market that have mental and also practical approach that is a leading one, and not only within Central Europe, but also within Europe-wide. So definitely an invitation for them as well.
That's a really good point. And I have to say, Czechs and Slovaks aren't the only one. I think Northern Irish companies would be the same. It's just culturally that shyness is definitely a thing. But honestly, if you think you've got a good story to tell, there's definitely good point.
And it's not so difficult. So it's really easy, or easier than we think.
Absolutely.
Okay, Mark. With that, we've come to the end of today's episode. Even if we know each other for more than 2 years, I believe, you know, we didn't have the chance to meet because you were, you know, in North Ireland first, and now there's a situation as it is, so it's not possible to meet, but I hope it will change.
Yeah.
But again, the insights you've provided today with me showed even to me a fresh new perspective, how to think about customer experience. So what I take away is to strive for a customer experience approach that is first, having self-reflection and thus seeking for constant education. I think that it's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
Second, companies or individuals have to be self-confident that maybe on a daily basis, customer experience is not the most urgent topic, but definitely a very important one. So mm-hmm. One that for a lot of companies may be or is a winning market strategy. And third, a customer experience that is celebrating. So if a company wins or at least participates in one of your prestigious awards, and with that achieving a milestone to prove for themselves, but also to the world or at least to the country, you know, that they are the ones to pay attention to.
Definitely.
Mark, thank you for finding time and being with us today.
Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate it. And as you said, hopefully, you're only, 45 minutes away, but hopefully we can make something happen over the next few months.
Already looking forward to it.
Počúvali ste podcast Generácia CX. Ďalšie epizódy si môžete vypočuť na web stránke www.generation.cx, kde nájdete aj ďalšie zaujímavé informácie.